Thanks, Rob. It is the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, I mentioned earlier in the carryout, the showdown between the United States and North Korea continues to escalate. Today, both countries issued stern warnings upon warnings upon warnings, with one country saying that they were going to test missiles close to U.S. territory. This, of course, is a story that has been simmering for years over sanctions, missiles, and nuclear weapons. How did we get here, and what do we need to know about the current showdown as opposed to the showdowns of the past? Here in studio to give us some background on our sordid past with North Korea is Charles Lipson. Charles Lipson is the Peter B. Ritzma Professor of Political Science at the University of Chicago, where he's the founding director of PIPES, the Program on International Politics, Economics, and Security. Professor Lipson, great to see you. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
All right, so why don't we get right to this? You wrote a piece today for Real Clear Politics, a column that you have there. How serious is this iteration of the North Korea-USA showdown?
It's really serious. This is not a game. This is serious business.
Why is that? Why would this one be different than any of the others?
Well, what's different is not the more heated rhetoric, although it is more heated. What's different is that for the first time, the North Koreans and the Chinese believe that the United States really means that it will not accept this and that something has to be done in the short term, relatively short term, because North Korea has now gotten so close to being able to deliver a nuclear weapon on an intercontinental missile that could destroy Los Angeles or Seattle.
And soon they would be able
to destroy cities, real American cities like Chicago.
Well, let's get to this point because, you know, I mean, that's real American cities. Let's get to this. What I think the takeaway, and this is the part that the U.S. Citizen is trying to grapple with, is
right.
Does the President of the United States, President Trump, with the rhetoric and the words that he's using, is he making the situation worse? Is this a situation that could be dealt with in negotiation other places, but because of the tone and the rhetoric that's coming out, that these two leaders are essentially having an ego battle?
He's making the situation worse deliberately and for a purpose. It's not irrational. It's not personal pique. And I think that that's entirely the wrong way to look at it. This is not like those late night tweets.
Mm-hmm.
This is a situation that relates to China. You have to understand the way that China's calculations work here. There's a peninsula divided, as it has been since World War II, between a communist North, which borders China, and a U.S.-allied South. They're both close to Japan, of course. The Chinese, who fought the Americans in the Korean War, have made a fundamental decision for many years that they would play rope-a-dope with the U.S. Why? Because they have decided that North Korea is so weak that if they put pressure on the regime, it could collapse. And that alternative would be worse than anything they actually thought could happen. They didn't think the U.S. would go to war. They did think if North Korea collapsed, it could end up as a U.S. ally bordering China. And you would have a massive migration across the Yalu River into China. Lots of bad things could happen.
Now, you see this a lot, and I'm always very thankful for you to come in studio because I have a sort of simple worldview when it comes to international relations and politics. But you always see this with Russia and Ukraine and other areas that the countries get a little skittish when there are weak countries at their border because it also could be that the Americans are aggressive, but the concept being that everybody wants an ally on their border. You see it over and over and over.
A weak ally that could collapse right on your border is a really bad thing. Imagine if Canada was very weak and about to collapse, and you feared that the next government that might come in there would be allied with Iran. Well, you know, we would not want to see that regime collapse. So you've got a situation like this with China, but what the United States is trying to do is change China's calculation. How could they do that? First, they have to make clear that there really could be a war on the peninsula. And that, I think, China would find even worse than the alternative. Second thing, they really hate the Japanese. And the idea that the Japanese could go nuclear is a very real threat. Why is it a threat? Because what the Japanese, much as they're opposed to nuclear weapons, are not going to want to be in a position where they couldn't deter with their own nuclear weapons something from North Korea. And the third thing that you're going to see, I think, fairly soon is a lot of these weapons and a lot of the things that have been going on in North Korea have been aided by the Chinese.
Yeah.
We're going to start ratcheting up economic sanctions.
I mean, I just ask you this, Charles, again, I mean, is this just essentially a proxy fight? I mean, is this China versus the U.S. through Korea?
Well, there is a proxy element, but we weren't worried about China, except for the South China Sea and its aggressive expansion into the South China Sea, which is unconscionable and which the Obama administration rolled over and played dead on. But we are not fundamentally concerned with China right now, except as an indirectly pointing at North Korea. We think that if China wants North Korea to change, it could make that happen. It could cut off tonight, while we're on the air, all the petrochemicals that are coming in, and North Korea couldn't turn on the lights.
And the fear, and you write about this today, and very interesting, is that it's going to be a financial fear for China. If China gets it cut off from the banks in the West and money from the United States, they don't want to see that. They would put pressure on North Korea to stop this if they felt they were going to lose financially any sort of deals with the West.
Yes. Remember, the North Koreans, though, are an independent actor. I think if the Chinese could take out the Kim family and replace it with somebody who was a kind of reliable client, they would. That's one reason why Kim Jong-un killed his half-brother in one of the very few states that had decent relations with North Korea, Myanmar. I mean, they used a weapon of mass destruction in a public airport to take out a brother-in-law under Chinese protection. You have to think, my goodness, they are really concerned.
And you also, I think it gives you a good understanding of you know, because we really want to paint the Kim family as one that is unhinged, they're crazy, and there are a lot to say that about it. But when you think about it, the pressures of China coming in to unseat them, the United States wanting to take their weapons away, you can understand why they're backed into a corner and why this is a serious situation. Charles Lipson is the Peter B. Ritzma Professor of Political Science at the University of Chicago. He's also the founding director of PIPES, the Program on International Politics, Economics, and Security. Let's do this. Let's take a break. We'll come back. I also want to talk about the past strategies, because President Obama, President Bush, they also had strategies that differed from President Trump, and that has led to where we are today. Professor Charles Lipson in studio. Stay with us. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Charles Lipson's in studio with me, the professor of political science at the University of Chicago. He's also the founding director of PIPES, the Program on International Politics, Economics, and Security. He's also a contributor to Real Clear Politics. He has a website as well. We'll give it at the end of the segment. You know, we're talking about past strategies and why this is such a unpredictable and unprecedented dispute that's happening between the United States and the UN and North Korea. You know, it's interesting because a lot of this is about how do you de-escalate and de-weaponize. I mean, there really has been – this all kind of started at the idea that they are closer than they ever have been, if they don't already have it, to having miniaturized nuclear warheads. And the push to say you can't have those. And you say in your piece today, and this is really a fascinating look at how that has worked, where the U.S. has said that to places like Libya. They've said that to places like the Ukraine. Give us your weapons, de-weaponize, and everything will be okay. And then the next thing that happens, they get taken
They're
out.
They're dead, yeah. When the Soviet Union split up, a lot of their weapons were in Ukraine. And the United States obviously wanted to get rid of these loose nukes. We made a deal where we paid Ukraine to get rid of them, but we also said that if you face any kind of a danger,
we'll protect you.
How'd that work out? Well, the Russians now have Crimea, and they have basically control of Eastern.
And we saw it with Gaddafi. I mean, that was the big thing. Like
Gaddafi got rid of his weapons of mass destruction, and then we got rid of Gaddafi. Now, both of those occurred under Obama, but the policies that Obama and George W. Bush pursued were not rhetorically different. Trump is harsher. They both said, you know, all options are on the table. The point is, they weren't. And North Korea knew it. China knew it.
This is the idea that George W. Bush, he's already committed to two wars, a war in Afghanistan and a war in Iraq. And they know that he's not serious when the rhetoric says, hey, we will take on North Korea. Obama ran on the concept that he didn't want conflict. They knew that was not.
And in fact, the next country in line was Iran. It's worth mentioning that Iran partners with North Korea on all of this, so that they have scientists there on every launch. Some of their missiles are North Korean missiles. North Korea also is the only country that will sell everything that it has. That's the only way you can get money. You should assume that all of the weapons that they develop are for sale on their version of eBay.
And you know, it's so interesting, Charles, because that's something you never hear. It's always about, well, they're going to try and launch an attack. But the idea that they're developing these weapons, these are million-dollar weapons, billion-dollar weapons that they could sell to rogue nations.
Well, they partner with Iran, and you can just assume that Iran will use that technology. They don't necessarily have to buy the weapons.
They
have their own scientists.
Right. Well, so, I mean, let's go back to Donald Trump, to President Trump, and this idea that, and another thing that you mentioned, which I thought was fascinating, this idea that for a long time, China and North Korea worked off the idea that the U.S. or the U.N. or any Western country wouldn't want to be sucked into a war on the Korean Peninsula. For whatever reason, that is an area nobody wants to go, right?
That's correct.
That's right.
We don't.
But what Donald Trump has succeeded in doing is shaking that foundation to say Donald Trump is actually taking that same rhetoric, saying you don't want us to come have a war. We don't want a war on a Korean Peninsula.
In fact, you notice today China was saying, if you come into a war, inevitably we'll have to get in. That has to be believed as well. Trump doesn't have to make them believe we'll go to war. He just has to make them believe it's a real enough risk if North Korea keeps on this path that we've got to do something. And the way that China could do it, besides direct pressure, what would they be looking for? They'd be probably looking for a coup in which they would have a subordinate partner there. What you would have to hope is that the danger, we want to really be clear from our studio right on the Chicago River, next to the Wrigley Building, to Highland Park is the distance from the DMZ to Seoul, Korea, with about, 8 times the population of Chicago?
Right. It's not
and they've
about,
got 40,000 conventional weapons. Moreover, there are a whole bunch of nuclear power plants in South Korea. And nobody talks about it, but if the North Koreans targeted those nuclear power plants, they could create hell on earth.
Let's talk about where this could go wrong for the United States. Of course, the rhetoric is ratcheted up. Trump today doubled down on that rhetoric into a way that he's backed himself into a corner where he keeps using things like, you're going to see trouble like you've never seen, fire and fury. And it seems every time he does it, North Korea calls his bluff. What's the danger in playing this game, Charles?
Well, it's a very dangerous game, and I said so in my column. I'll continue to write about this. I've been talking about it for a number of months before others were putting it on the agenda. It was the lead article on my blog because I just think it's so dangerous. The problem, really, is that unless you make the probability of escalation real, the Chinese won't act against North Korea because you have to make it worse for them. They think it could be worse for them,
right,
to not do something than to do something. You want them to act. I would say that the danger, of course, is that that Kim Jong-un does something that really does provoke an action. And when he does, things can spiral out of control. World War I began really with a conflict between the Serbs and the Austro-Hungarians over what seemed like a minor issue. But ultimately, everybody got pulled in, and the reason they got pulled in was that they didn't want to see their ally be wiped out without their assistance.
I mean, that is how world wars start. I mean, that you are absolutely right. And to think about it, I mean, what's scary about the rhetoric that's happening here is that the rhetoric needs to work, meaning you need to get China to do something. And so the question just becomes that maybe, and just maybe, I would say this, that the unpredictability of the president of the United States and the way that he doesn't follow a script actually does work to the advantage of the country, because China can't, it's like playing poker, they can't figure out if Donald Trump really thinks the things
that helped win a Nobel Prize. That very thought, said by Tom Schelling in the 1960s, that unpredictability, and by the way, Nixon actually used it. He said one more thing that's worth thinking about, which is you want to give the other side the last clear chance to avoid disaster.
Charles Lipson is the Peter B. Ritzma Professor of Political Science at the University of Chicago, where he's the founding director of PIPES, the Program on International Politics, Economics, and Security. And your blog is at Real Clear Politics is the column you do, but the site.
But I do a blog called zipdialogue.com, and I have news and comment every day.
There you go. Charles, thanks for coming in. Appreciate it.